Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
From Hollywood, California, by way of the Broken Skull Ranch, this is the Steve Austin Show.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Now, here's Steve Austin.
All right, everybody, welcome to Steve Austin Show. Man, I'll tell you what, I got a hell of a show today. I'm talking to my favorite pro wrestler of all time. It's funny when you talk about favorite pro wrestlers, because you talk to different guys, they all come from different camps. You got the guys that think Terry Funk's the greatest in the world, Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior. Hey, some maybe even think Stone Cold. But if you're talking to Steve Austin, if you're talking to Shawn Michaels, if you're talking to Triple H, that man is Ric Flair. Ric Flair joins me here today on the show. As a matter of fact, I'm sitting in his hotel room. He's sitting right in front of me. But before I bring Rick into the conversation, I've got to go back to last night when we started at the WWE appearance for the 2K14 video game release. And it was kind of a panel discussion with a lot of the WWE superstars there. Jim Ross leading the charge. And seemingly, things got out of control. We were having such a good time. The people listening were having such a good time. Twitter was going crazy because this thing was streaming live. And I was on stage laughing my ass off. Ric Flair was telling some tremendous stories. And Jim Ross was in rare form. All the guys were having a blast. But it led to a lot of stuff on Twitter. And nonetheless, that's why I'm here today with Ric Flair, my man, here at the Marriott Hotel in downtown L.A. Rick, everybody's going to be talking about last night. It was fun. First of all, welcome to the show. You're my favorite pro wrestler of all time. You're a living legend. I'm honored to be sitting here in your room talking to you.
Well, thank you. And I don't know what happened last night. They just told me to entertain them, and I did. But apparently it wasn't received the way it was supposed to be.
Well, you know, bottom line, I think they had a successful video game promotion, and it was what it was, but man, I had a good time.
Well, the people that run the game loved it. So, the problem is that corporate WWE is, I guess, mad at me, number one, which upsets me because I love the company and respect them so much, and I guess we just drifted and I told stories, and I guess I think they wanted the focus of the evening to be about the game, and which everybody at the game was happy with it, but
I think they told you, said, "Hey man, go out there and be yourself and have a good time," and that's what you did.
Beyond a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah, you were the nature boy, yeah. And I was center stage, laughing my ass off. Everybody was in.
And I had appeared for him in the afternoon and did a great deal for him, and then we were outdoors. You know, you weren't here for that yet, Steve. You hadn't arrived yet, and that came off wonderfully. You know, so I don't know.
Well,
I'm dumbfounded by this.
Well, anyway, you know, we'll let all that shake out. We're not going to sit here and lose any sleep over. We got other stuff to talk about. But hey, man, we were talking in the green room last night, and coming into this interview, man, I started doing my research. I always like to go as far back as I can about all the people that I talked to on the show. And I'm sitting there, I'm reading the Wikipedia about Ric Flair, and I know you wrote your book, To Be the Man, uh-huh, several years back.
Yes.
But I have such a hard time reading books. I haven't got to that book yet, so had I had
Either have I.
You haven't read either? I like to do my research, and I'm researching like a sumbitch trying to get all the facts on you.
I haven't read it either.
I've watched 30 Ric Flair matches, and of course, I watched your whole career damn near from the start, as soon as I started getting you down there in my region. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that all started for me in NWA. Mm-hmm. But let's go back a little bit to your beginning, mm-hmm, because you started at Vern Gagne's camp.
1972.
And you had some great cats in that same class with you.
Oh, my
some
God.
Some very notable people.
Ken Patera, bronze medal winner in the Munich Olympics in 72. Jim Brunzel, great guy. Greg Gagne, myself, Khosro Vaziri, the Iron Sheik, who everybody knows.
Yep.
And I was thinking it was Slaughter, but Slaughter started a year later, so it was not.
Billy Robinson was in that camp too, right?
Billy Robinson was the instructor.
Instructor?
Yeah.
Okay, now we were talking last night, because I've heard a lot of Billy Robinson stories and never had a chance to meet the guy.
Yeah.
And he was a pretty good shooter, or hooker.
Yeah.
Pretty tough.
Very tough.
And you were saying last night that had it gone down between him and Iron Sheik, who I always heard was tough, great freestyle wrestler, mm-hmm, Billy Robinson would take that. You agree?
Yes.
Yeah,
and so will the Sheik.
Yeah. Wait,
I watched it take place.
But you wrestled amateur in high school.
Yes.
And you were a state champion.
Yes.
When did you start watching the business of professional wrestling?
My whole life.
You did.
I grew up on it. Yeah. I love the Crusher and the Bruiser and, you know.
And you grew up in that Minnesota area, right?
I grew up in Minnesota, yes.
In that region.
I grew up in Minneapolis, yes. So, and AWA was, at that time, you know, one of the premier, it was a AWA, NWA, and it was WWF back then.
Right.
So, yeah.
So how was Gagne's camp from a learning standpoint?
Brutal.
But you know what? The thing that I've noticed about almost all the cats that came out of his camp could work their asses off.
Yeah. No, but I quit three times. It was so hard. I weighed 300 pounds because I thought I wanted to be Dick the Bruiser, right?
And right.
The only guy that made me look good was Patera because he weighed 330. The first day of camp we got there, we had to run 2 miles out in the cornfield. It was in a barn. We trained in a barn at Vern Farm.
And really cold, right?
Cold, but the first day, run 2 miles, do 500 free squats, right, and 250 push-ups. I mean, the only guy that made me look good was Patera because all he did was lift weights. It was brutal.
Now, but you went to college on a football scholarship, right?
I did, but I did not predict. You know what that means?
Right,
you
right,
played
right.
football in college.
Yeah.
So I was there for a year, and then they wanted me to go to summer school, and I didn't go to summer school, so
right.
I came back and I became academically ineligible. But you know me, I just stayed in a fraternity house for another year and didn't tell my parents that I wasn't playing.
So when it comes time to say, hey, I'm going to get in the business of pro wrestling, was it because you met Ken Patera?
Because Ken was there.
So tell me what happened here. Where did you meet him and how did you guys say, hey, let's go do this?
Well, I was a bouncer at a place called George's in the Park in Minneapolis, right? And I'm sitting there, it's called the Red Dog Saloon to this day. It's closed down now, and I see this guy walking in. I say to myself, that's Ken Patera. Everybody
right.
followed him back then. He was the first guy to press 500 pounds over his head. And he walked into the bar, sat down, lit up a Salem, and got a drink. And I went, this can't be Ken Patera. He's smoking a cigarette and drinking some vodka training for the Olympics. And I walked up to him and go, are you Ken Patera? He goes, yeah. And I went, I was so taken back by the fact, I said, what are you smoking a cigarette for? He said, why wouldn't I? I said, well, you're drinking too. He said, I don't, so what, you know, what's wrong with that? He said, everybody I compete against over in Russia drinks more than I do.
So, right.
Yeah, I mean, it's the truth. And so, and we became very close friends. And then we rented a house together, which was a nightmare. We lived together for a year. You can only imagine that, right?
But what were you guys doing to pay the bill? Okay, so you were bouncing. Was he training? What was he doing for a living?
He was being paid by Gagne.
Gotcha.
To subsidize his income and with the hopes that he'd win a gold medal and come back as the world's strongest man.
Right.
Yeah.
Dude, who was doing the cooking on this living arrangement?
Oh, we had a number of people dropping by. I was also an orderly at the hospital. My dad got me a job as a central service orderly at a hospital.
Orderly at a hospital?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, yeah. So then we had lots of nurses coming by to cook for us.
So was it Patera's big idea to say, hey, you should join, we should get into pro wrestling together?
Yeah, he said, you want to give it a try? And I said, yeah, God, I loved it. I loved wrestling. I grew up watching it my whole life. It used to drive my parents crazy. You know, I'm adopted, right?
Yeah.
So I had my birthday on the 25th of February, which is my birthday, and I was adopted March 18th. And my parents never told me I was adopted. But every year, they'd say, we're going to celebrate your anniversary. And I didn't know what that meant, you know, and they never explained to me until I was older, right? But my dad would say, what do you want to do? I said, I want to go to the wrestling matches. So he would take me down there. And at that time, it was Mad Dog Grishan, Larry Henning, I mean, Harley Race, Ray Stevens, Nick Bockwinkel. I mean, it was out of my mind. All these big stars there, you know. Rhodes and Murdoch were there. I mean,
yeah.
What's Wolf's name? Buddy Wolf was there.
Right.
I mean, it was phenomenal. I had a great time.
So you go down there. He says, hey, let's go give us a try. So you're in Minnie, right?
In
Minnesota.
Minnie. Yep.
So Vern's camp is the one you go to. So what do? You say, stick out your hand. You meet Vern Gagne. You say, hey, I want to
I already met Vern.
Okay, you already had.
Greg and I went to college.
So what was the cost of going to the wrestling school?
No cost.
No cost?
No.
percentage of your earnings?
Percentage of earnings.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
He was ahead of the curve.
For the next 10 years.
Oh, are you serious?
Yeah, no, I'm serious.
Oh, a shyster.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, that was respect to Vern, but you know, he was one of those guys that's looking farther down the road than the other guy who was charging $1,500 to $2,500.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Right.
It's so, like, it's like the guys all over the country now that are training these kids for $1,000 a month or $1,500, and they can't make the call to send them anywhere. It's ridiculous.
Well, so
that's the most prostituted business in the world right now, training wrestlers. Everybody wants to be a wrestler, but unless you can make the call to WWE or TNA or a major promotion, where's the kid going to go?
Well, and that's so many people ask me that all the time. Hey, Steve, you got any recommendations for a training school, man? And, you know, I can recommend Lance Storm over in Calgary if you're up in that neck of the woods. Local.
Yeah.
I know that Gene LaBelle has a school here in L.A. somewhere. But other than that, I don't really know of anybody. And you know, back in the day, there's so many horror stories of these young cats getting their heads knocked off because they don't know anybody.
Getting
taken to the cleaners.
We got our brains beat out. It was brutal. Nobody gets it. That's why I guess, you know, I've been called insensitive over the years. There's a reason. Driving 1,000 miles a day for $50. Are you kidding?
Hey, but yeah, but before you got to drive those 1,000 miles for $50, you had to go through that camp.
Yes,
and that had to have been a well-structured camp because Vern Gagne, had an impeccable amateur background as well.
Very well.
And they turned out a lot of great hands there.
And he played for the Packers.
Right. Tough guy.
Yeah, real tough.
So he was helping with the training?
Of course.
Was it solely Billy Robinson?
No, it was Vern and Billy and Don Morocco.
Oh, man, those three tough guys
there. Yeah.
And you come with an amateur background. I always wondered, I mean, you wrestled, but you could have really incorporated even more of that amateur style into your pro style.
You know what? I was first of all, let's clarify this. I was a private school state champion.
Gotcha.
Because I got in trouble, shocker, when I was 15, and my parents put me in a private school in Wisconsin.
Right.
So I wasn't like a 4A state champion. I was a private school state champion.
Right.
But I did beat the kid that was the state champion in public school during the course of the year. So I consider myself a state champion.
But well, let's get to the evolution to your pro style here in a little bit. Let's stay there. Let's stay here in the camp. You've got some great classmates there with you learning. How much time was this every single day? Because when I went to school at Chris Adams, it was only one time a week, and this was with 30 people and for a two-hour stretch. My time in the ring was very limited. It was basically a foot in the door.
Yeah.
But you guys had been getting a lot of in-ring time.
Four hours a day, right? But we didn't wrestle. We conditioned.
And bumped? And learned how to take
and
bumps?
And learned how to take bumps, yep. Right. That was it. And then it's the funniest story in the world. Nobody even told me, you know, what was going on. And I got my first match with George Gadaski. And Vern walks up to me and said, going to go out and wrestle? I said, I don't know how to wrestle. I mean, what are you talking about? I can take the bumps you taught me how to do. I can do free squats and that. And
He
didn't smart me up.
You got to go to the ring.
Yeah, for 10 minutes.
Did you know that it was a work yet?
Hell no.
So what happened?
This guy, George Gadaski, never forget it, Scrap Iron Man, he carried me around for 10 minutes. He just said, listen to me, kid.
Yeah.
Like Larry Henning, when I wrestled Larry Henning, you know, Larry Henning said, pretend like you're getting on a Greyhound bus and leave it driving to me, kid.
Hey, was he pretty snug?
Who?
Larry.
Oh, you think? You know what he used to do to rib me?
What?
We'd be wrestling, right? And he'd put me against the rope, right, and smack the crap out of me and say, don't sell this, right? So I didn't fall down. Then he'd look at the referee and goes, oh, he's a smartass, huh? Then he'd back me the rope again and say, and smack me again. And say, okay, sell this. So I'd go down and come and I said, oh, the guy's really a smart ass. Now he's laying on his back. You have no idea where I've been, buddy.
He took you to school.
He took me to school. Race. Yeah, you're kidding?
Well, how long was it before you had your illustrious first match?
Let me see. I started in September after the Olympics. I had my first match in November.
So how many months of training was that?
2 months.
2 months?
Yeah.
4 hours a day.
Yeah.
So you're coming along.
5 days a week.
Five days a week.
Yeah.
You're greener than hell. How long did it really take you to put the business together? Because now, because this is, what year is this?
1972.
72. And in 75, you have the plane crash.
70, yes, yeah. I mean,
you broke your back in three spots. Yes. Now, prior to then, well, you always wrestled around about 235 pounds body weight, give or take.
I was 270 at the time.
But I know, but that's what I'm saying.
Yes.
Prior to the crash, you were at this heavier weight. Yeah. What was your work style, you know, at this heavier poundage?
Well, actually, where I really learned how to work, because I didn't have much of an opportunity, was George Scott, who'd been in Minneapolis with us, right? Went to North Carolina and became the booker, and he and Wahoo were very close, and Wahoo went down to North Carolina, and he gave me a call one day and said, hey, they want you to come down here.
You start off working heel or baby?
Heel.
Okay.
Yeah, and so I got off the plane in Charlotte, and back in 1974, it was wrestling and racing. Yeah. That was it, right? Highest building in Charlotte was 10 stories. It was Belk's department store. You know, now it's a metropolis. But,
right.
Hell, they didn't, everything back then was brown bag. You couldn't even buy a drink down there, you know.
Yeah.
It was the Bible Belt. But I got there and checked into a hotel room over on Tryon for $9 a night. And then I had to hitchhike to my rides to get to my ride. It put me in the car with Valentine, of all people, the greatest river of all time, right, John, right? And he'd put on opera music.
As a rib, because he liked it?
He wouldn't talk to me all the way. He wouldn't talk to me to get to the town.
That old veteran.
He dropped me off at the Holiday Inn on Little Rock Road. I had to hitchhike back at 2 in the morning. You kidding me? Don't even get me going.
So there you are. How long did it take before you had a great understanding of psychology in the ring?
I think I started to understand psychology about my second or third month that I was there. You know, I got to work every night, which was great. And I remember, and I'll forget, I was there 3 weeks, and I got a check for $1,000. So you know me, right?
Wow.
Guess what I did?
Spent it.
I went and bought a Cadillac. An old Fleetwood.
Yeah. Well, is it, out of all the guys that you've gone to school with, who's leading the pack as far as progression and learning things in the ring?
Of the guys I went to school with?
Yes.
I thought Greg was a great performer.
Yeah,
you know?
I did too.
He didn't have the size.
No. Not a great look.
Yeah.
Very good with psychology. He helped me out tremendously in my WCW days.
Yeah, no, Greg was great, but didn't have the size at that time. You know, back then size was important, mm-hmm. and you know, he never left the AWA. So you know, it's one of those things where he didn't get an opportunity. You know, I got down there, and all of a sudden I'm in the middle of the National Wrestling Alliance. I mean.
So you were in AWA there for about 2 years.
No, 1 year.
1 year.
Yeah.
And then down to NWA.
Yep. October, April 4th, 1974.
And this is Crockett Promotions in North Carolina.
Yes.
So they bring you
in. I was there. I was in Minneapolis for a year.
And had you come up with a Nature Boy thing yet?
Okay. No, the Nature Boy thing came after the airplane crash.
Okay.
Yep.
So you're there. Are you wrestling who? As Ric Flair?
Just Ric Flair.
Just Ric Flair.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's before you started dyeing your hair?
No, actually, which is a great story. I dyed, first of all, I curled my hair because I wanted to be like Dusty Rhodes.
Oh, no,
right?
You curled your hair.
Yeah, and I wanted to call myself Ramblin' Ricky Rhodes. Vern goes, go with Ric Flair, okay? Stick with me, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I was Billy Graham's official driver, right? So Billy Graham's
superstar?
Wife, Bonnie, yeah.
Really?
I was the driver, hell
oh,
yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so then his wife, Bonnie, bleached my hair, and I got on a plane, and away I went.
Oh.
Yeah.
Was superstar talking like the superstar back then?
He was a great guy, man. I mean,
yeah.
I got along with him good, and I feel terrible what's happened to his life now. I mean, I see Billy once in a while, but he's you know, he's burnt a lot of bridges, and it's sad, you know, because he had a great run at WWF and a great run in Minneapolis, and you know, just who knows what happened, but he's burnt a lot of bridges. I mean, it is what it is.
So you're in NWA. You've been there for a couple of years. It's 1975.
Mm-hmm.
You're in a plane. This plane is
I just got my big break.
Just got your big break. How'd you get the big break?
Wahoo pushed for it. I was going to...
Really?
I actually had... was going to wrestle... I was on the way to Wilmington, an outdoor show, 10,000 people, and I was on my way to wrestle Wahoo to become the Mid-Atlantic champion, which was a huge deal, right?
Right.
And we, damn it, we didn't run out of gas at 4,000 feet, you know. And the plane crashed and killed the pilot. He lived for a year, but never regained consciousness. Valentine paralyzed from the waist down.
Well, break this down for me, man.
Oh, I forgot. The other guy in our class was Bob Bruggers.
Okay, Bob Bruggers.
Yeah.
Well, break us down for me. You were talking briefly about this last night. I guess the plane was going 230, 260 miles an hour.
When it hit the ground. Stop. Yeah.
Sudden stop.
Yeah.
So there, the plane crash happens.
Yeah. Well, the speedometer on the plane,
yeah,
when it crashed, was stuck at 230. That's how fast we're going down.
Okay. You're at a sudden stop. Total calamity. Dude, what is going on in your head? Are you knocked out? Break the scene down for me there.
No, what happened was back in those days, you know, which the ambulances were like the old military ambulances. It's not like now where it's like a luxury vehicle, right?
Right.
They were stacking us up, you know, on racks. And the guy said to me, and it's one of my greatest stories, the guy goes, you better hurry. I think we're going to lose this one. And I thought he was talking about me, right? So yeah. I go to the guy, look at, I don't care what happens, but get my toiletry kit out of my bag. There's a number in there from a chick named, and get rid of that. And so, and he did. You know what? He brought that message to me 10 years later. I ran into him at an event. I said, get that number. Her name was Sheila. She was in Norfolk, and I was married, right? I said, tell Sheila I love her, but not right now.
To be continued.
To be continued.
But that had to be a heavy scene, because Johnny Valentine was paralyzed from the waist down.
Yes.
The pilot was dead. You got a broken back.
The pilot died a year later.
Died a year later, okay.
But never regained.
But it's mass devastation. You guys are there. Is there panic? Are you yelling? You got to be in pain. You got a broke back in three places. Can you move and walk?
I couldn't move or walk, but I wasn't in that much pain. And the greatest thing of all time was back then, you know, kayfabe was it, right?
Right.
Guess who the first guy in the hospital to see me was?
Who?
Waldo McDaniels.
Really?
Yeah. He walked right in the hospital room. I was laying on a metal table and said, you okay, kid? I said, yeah. He said, man, we'll get through this.
How much older was Wahoo than you to call you kid?
Wahoo is, Wahoo died 9 years ago. I would say Wahoo would be, how old was he then? Or how old
No, just, now? Just how many years older than you was
oh,
he?
Oh, I would say he was...
5, 6, 7?
Oh, no, more than that.
More than that?
He'd already, you know, he played.
He's already established
years,
veteran.
Yeah. I would say he was more like 15 years older.
Okay.
Yeah.
But man, but that was going to be a great break to
work
with him.
Yeah.
But that speaks to how protected the business was back then. For that to be such a big deal for him to walk into your room.
You know what saved the business? You know what saved the business?
What?
Of all people, Tim Woods walked off the plane.
Yeah.
He didn't get hurt. And he made it to the Coliseum the next day. If he hadn't. If it ever, the public never found out that I wasn't traveling with Wahoo, but Woods was working with Valentine at the time.
Right.
If he hadn't showed up.
Gotcha.
And the public to this day, I mean, I'm sure they know it now, but if Woods walked out and went to the Greensboro Coliseum the next day, and, you know, my hat's off to him. And Tim's gone now, too.
That would have been interesting had he not made it out. And just
it would have killed the business.
You guys
thought
all
we were
flying around again.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But it spoke to what kind of a man Wahoo was. Just walk in the hospital room and say, hey, kid,
walk right
in
the hospital. I'm supposed to be wrestling
that
night at Legion Field. Yeah, he came walking right in and said, you okay? And I said, yeah. I said, we'll get through this.
What was it about you that he took a shining to?
I don't know. I guess we just got along great. I mean, everything. I like to hunt, like to fish. I don't play golf, but you know that was.
You like to hunt and fish,
huh?
You like to hunt and fish?
I do. Yeah, I grew up in Minnesota. Yeah. I grew up and fished all the time.
You need to come down to the ranch and go hunt with me.
I will.
Okay,
I'm coming down for sure. Yeah, I used to go up North Carolina. We wild boar hunt a lot, right? You know, we chase the boars off the mountain, right?
Yeah.
And Wahoo gave me a .44 one day and said, you just stand here, they're going to come running to you, right?
Yeah.
And man, they do. They're 400 pounds, those
yes,
suckers.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Are you kidding me? Jesus. The greatest thing I ever saw in my life on that one trip was one of those guys, you know, that do that. They get the dogs and they gut them,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So this guy, I'm sitting on the road watching this. I'm just a 24-year-old kid, right? And this guy, the boar got his dog, right?
Yeah.
And the guy jumped on top of the boar with a Bowie knife.
Yeah.
And stabbed him.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I've never seen anything in my life.
Yeah, I got some
and
guys.
We're up there in Franklin, Tennessee. It's like, you know, that's where they filmed Deliverance.
Right.
Good Lord. A little different crew than I was used to coming from Minneapolis.
Yeah, there's not a lot of great medical facilities over here either.
I never saw a black person until I came down south.
Really?
In Minneapolis.
Yeah.
It's funny. I mean, I have so many black friends, you know.
Yeah.
But I wasn't used to that, right? You know,
But I heard Wahoo McDaniels was tough as nails.
Tougher nails.
Tell me about that.
Are you kidding me? You kidding? Wallow McDaniels had a vasectomy, right? At 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and I wrestled him the night in Fayetteville.
Really?
Yeah, that's how tough Wahoo was. He didn't understand the word pain. But back then, if you were advertised, you had to go to get paid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was the stories about him running barefoot for miles and miles and miles?
The true story, he ran 6 miles, not barefoot. He ran 36 miles in 6 hours with a bet with Bill Watts for $100.
For $100.
Yeah,
Wahoo. True story?
True story.
Did Watts pay up?
Of course he did. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
He ran 36 miles in 6 hours or something like that. I mean, ridiculous, you know, it was on a bet. Not barefoot by any means, but, you know, Wahoo was just an incredible athlete. I was telling you last night that he had the high school rushing record from Odessa, Texas for 20 years until Billy Sims, who won the Heisman Trophy and went on to Oklahoma, broke the record. Wahoo was way ahead of his time. He ran a 800 yard dash at 210 pounds.
I was a big fan of Wahoo, but I never knew his athletic achievements.
Oh my God.
I just heard the stories when I got into business how tough he was.
Hey, I walked into Wahoo's house one time, and this is the guy's honest truth. He had a picture of himself, I mean, a blowing up picture, right? Of himself, Charlie Pride, Lee Trevino, and Mickey Mantle all holding their drivers together.
Oh,
everybody knew Wahoo. Are you kidding me?
Jesus, that's a great story.
I went, you know, because I love Charlie Pride. I
mean, who did?
He knew everybody. You know, what happened with Wahoo, you know, is he was with the Jets, right?
Yeah.
And every time he made a tackle, right, he was middle linebacker, they go, guess who? And 86,000 people go, Wahoo, right?
Yeah.
Then they drafted Namath. And they shipped Wahoo off. They didn't want anybody having a bigger celebrity status than Namath. And I just saw Namath about 6 months ago, and I asked him a story. They traded Wahoo to Miami.
Are you kidding
me? True story. Yep.
That's unbelievable.
Yep.
So there you are in the hospital.
He was so popular up there, you know, but when they got Namath, they didn't want any competition. And he went to Miami, and I do signs with Namath now, and I asked him a story. He said, it's the truth.
Man, things turned out okay for Joe Namath.
Yeah, they
Jets,
sure did. Yeah.
Know.
Yeah.
But let's go back to
the only thing he can't do is kiss Aaron Andrews anymore. On the sideline. Yeah. Who puts Joe Namath in rehab? Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Hide the note. Yeah. Hey, but let's talk about your broken back. You landed in the hospital, and now you're weighing about 270.
I weighed 255 at the time, and I went down to 180.
Down to 180.
Yeah.
And so you decided after how long to get back in the ring?
Well, they hurt, you know the business, right? Yes, when you're ready. So I went back to work, and I got my body weight back up in 6 months to 218 pounds, and they put me in a match, and I couldn't get myself to fall on my back. I mean, it was a mental block.
Scared to death, right?
Yeah. So I'm calling my doctor from the locker room at Park Center in Charlotte, right? Are you sure I can do this? Are you sure I can do it? And he goes, yes, you're going to be okay. You healed. I mean, it's a miracle, but don't be. But I couldn't get myself to take a turnbuckle.
Yeah.
I couldn't get a backdrop. So you know how George Scott fixed that? He put me in the ring every day for 2 weeks with Tim Woods for an hour. I said, you know what? I was in Farmland, Virginia one night, 300 people. I said, I can't do this anymore with Woods.
He was stretching me.
I took the backdrop. Good Lord. But it's hard to get over something like that, right? I mean, I could not get myself to take a hard turnbuckle or a backdrop. Of course, now the backdrop is what made me famous in the business.
Yeah, I want to get to that.
Yeah.
But let's talk, because you started off and you were a heavier guy, and you kind of stayed after you got your health back around at 230, 235 mark.
235,
which you always consider like the premier weight for a pro wrestler because you're my favorite guy, so you're the prototype. So then your style evolves, and you turn into the Nature Boy.
Mm-hmm.
And you're on a roll.
Met Olivia Walker, Johnny Walker's wife. She started making my robes.
Right.
And
so then how do you decide to call yourself the Nature Boy? Because last night we were talking, and I just assumed that Nature Boy Buddy Rogers was your favorite wrestler, but no, it wasn't. It was.
I met Buddy later on in life.
Yeah.
My favorite wrestler at that time was Ray Stevens or Wahoo McDaniels.
Yeah. So then why did you decide to go with the Nature Boy Ric Flair?
I didn't. George Scott did.
George Scott did.
George Scott said, we're going to call you the Nature Boy. George Scott and the Nature Boy and Buddy were real close friends.
So George Scott's friends with Buddy Rogers.
I ended up wrestling Rogers twice, so isn't that funny?
Yeah, so was he cool with you being the new Nature Boy?
Oh, yeah, but I'll tell you the greatest story of all. He walks in the locker room in Greensboro.
Go ahead.
And he walks up to me and he goes, hey, kid, there's only one diamond in this business and you're looking at him. Okay. No problems, bud.
Was he serious?
Yeah, he was serious. You talk about an ego, Buddy Rogers, he was it, man.
Well, you know what? I'm sitting here talking to Ric Flair. I'm in his hotel room. It's Los Angeles, California. It's Steve Austin with the greatest professional wrestler that has ever lived. I'm going to take a break right now, talk to our sponsors that help keep this show on the air for free. When I do, I'm coming back. We're going to talk about the evolution, how he turns into the Nature Boy, the robes, the outfits, the backdrops, everything that goes with being the man. I'm coming back with Ric Flair. Hey, man, do you own or rent your home? Sure you do, and I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with GEICO. GEICO makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's GEICO easy. Visit GEICO.com today. That's GEICO.com.
Welcome to the Steve Austin Show.
All right, I'm coming back with the greatest professional wrestler of all time. We're about to start talking about the evolution of Ric Flair, the robes, the outfits, the charisma. But when we went to break, me and Rick started talking, and he remembered a story from when he was at Vern Gagne's camp. He actually quit. I said, hold it, Rick, don't tell me the story. You can tell the story on the show. So what happened,
well,
Rick?
After that first day of, the 500 free squats, the two-mile run, and 250 squats, it took me 3 hours to do all of it, right? They wouldn't let me quit, right? And so I just said, I didn't even tell him. I just sent word I was quitting.
You sent word.
I wouldn't dare tell him to his face. And I got a knock on my door. I was living in a duplex at the time, right? And he walked in my house, grabbed me, threw me out in the front yard, and said, you quit football, okay? You were a failure in high school. You ain't quitting this, kid. Be at the barn, 2 o'clock. I was there.
How old were you?
21 years old. 23.
But he saw potential in you and said he was going to hold you accountable to something. Did he? Did he see a wayward young man who needed some guidance? What was it?
I think Vern was the kind of guy that wasn't going to let anybody quit on him.
Didn't want anybody to quit.
Vern was a man's man. I feel terrible what's happened to him now. You know all this tragedy now in his life, but I mean.
But you could have seemingly said, hey, you know, F you, I'm not coming back,
no,
I quit.
No, you know.
You don't tell him that?
I would have never said F you to Vern Gagne.
Total respect.
Not a chance. Are you kidding? Okay. I was back out there at 2 o'clock. I couldn't even walk my legs from the floor for the 500 squats.
But so you're sore, you beat up, you didn't know what to expect. You quit, he comes and gets you. Is it like...
It's like...
You could have gotten your car and your Cadillac you just bought for $1,000 and hauled ass.
No, I didn't have that Cadillac until I got in North Carolina. You got it backwards, yeah.
Okay.
Back then, I was riding around in a Volkswagen Beetle.
Wasn't an option.
No, it was not an option for him.
Okay, so we're back in Carolina. Now
I'll throw another name that was training us, too. Joe Scarpello.
Joe Scarpello.
Yeah, he was training us, too. I mean, we had an elite bunch of teachers, but nobody smarting us up, man.
Well, I know. I won't get into my first match. We're talking about you. But so we're back in NWA. You're coming back from your back injury. Uh-huh. And then who's making your robes?
Wrestling. Olivia Walker.
Yeah.
Johnny Walker's
wife starts making your ropes.
Yeah, she was the original.
Now, here's the thing. You've got the idea for the Nature Boy through George Scott, who's friends with Buddy Rogers.
Yep.
And so you think, well, I got to come out with the loud-ass, beautiful ropes.
And then at that point... the Tim Woods house that day, we decided that, and Tim Woods was real close to wrestling too.
Right.
And Olivia Walker at that time was making all this stuff for the Ron Sand Cowboys, Glenn Campbell, you name it, all this stuff, right?
Oh, wow.
And so she said, I called her and she said, I'll make you a robe. Yeah. So I got that white one. The first one I ever had was the white one with the purple butterflies, and we went from there.
So she was making pro-grade stuff for some badass entertainers.
Yeah, Porter Wagner,
this wasn't
all
just
those
some
guys.
Person making
Loretta
robes.
Loretta Lynn, Tammy Wynette. No,
she was...
Best of the best.
Now, that's why she's making your robes.
Yeah.
You weren't the best of the best
yet.
Exactly, that was yet to come.
Yeah.
But you got to look like the best to be the best.
Exactly, yeah. Well, I'll tell you something. Another reason I like Wahoo was... Wahoo was the only guy in the world that would tell me to call Clifford Macias and order two pair of boots, right? Yeah, the boots were $200 a piece back then.
Right.
Eventually went to $400, right?
Yeah.
Well, I'd only made $100 that week. Yeah. I love Waterweek. I said, okay, Chief, how do I pay for this stuff?
Well, so that begs the question. So you're on what kind of dime you're on right there as far as your paydays go, but you start making all these elaborate outfits, mm-hmm. turn into the Nature Boy. Mm-hmm. How much would these robes start to cost, and what was the highest price you actually paid for one?
The highest price, they average around $8,000 a piece.
God, was she cutting you a little bit of a break from being one of the boys, or was it straight up business?
No, straight up business.
Straight up business. Yeah.
And of course, and then I started getting them. Then Orndorff wanted to get one, and then Valentine jumped on the bandwagon. But I always made sure mine was better.
I remember one of the ladies that made my first robe is a red sequin robe, and I think she actually got busted for shoplifting, stealing the sequins.
I know, Olivia. Olivia, but it took her 2 months to make a robe.
Really?
They were phenomenal. Yeah, my God.
So what's it like to travel around with all this stuff? Because I've always known you as the kiss-stealing, wheeling-dealing, mm-hmm. you know, limousine-riding, jet-flying son of a gun, wearing the slacks, the suits, the whole presentation. Were you doing that back then?
Oh, yeah.
Were you ever just like a blue jeans kind of guy?
No. Even growing up, I liked dressing sharp.
Yeah.
And I had no problem. I was telling someone last night, said, how much money? I said, I was spending $10,000 a month in the 80s on clothes.
Yeah.
I never wanted to wear the same thing twice on TV. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, you're the total opposite for me. I don't give a shit.
I know.
My wife gets on my ass. I'll go do something. She goes, no, you read that. You've already worn that shirt too many times.
Yeah.
But you were ahead of the curve. You're like all these people today.
Hey, just like Snoop Dogg said, I was bling for bling was bling.
Yeah. All right, you turn to the Nature Boy Ric Flair. And, man, I tell you what, your work style in the ring, I've never seen you blow up. I asked you this question last night. Let's go ahead and cover this. You never blow up in any match I've ever seen of you. I've been around the world with you. We haven't wrestled a lot, but I've seen you wrestle in person. I've seen you wrestle on TV. You never blow up. You told me why last night.
Well, number one, I worked out. You know, I mean, the one thing I got from Vern was the work ethic of every day, right? And so I from the time from 1972 to 1986, I did 500 free squats every morning. I just woke up. It was religion, right?
Every day.
And the push-ups. And then I went to the gym. I always had a home gym. Wherever I lived, I built a home gym.
Right.
I didn't go to a lot of public gyms. And I just worked out, you know. And then, of course, I was so excited. You know, there was no holding me back. I never thought about taking a deep breath. The only time I ever thought about taking a deep breath is, you know, when I lost my confidence in 1989. Right. We discussed that personally. And, you know, I might have blown up a few times then just because I had lost my self-confidence for a period of time. But that was Jim Herd, you know, trying to make me into Spartacus.
So what was your – I want to get that story. But, yeah, I want to ask you a question because you've never blown up. And I've been in the ring a couple of times and I've come back from injuries and I got to get that rust off and I'm sucking mm-hmm. air. And you know better than anybody, there's nothing worse than being in the ring and not having the oxygen to either go on offense, make a comeback, or get the right heat.
Steve.
You've got to be able to breathe or you cannot work. So a guy who can work like you can, what are you thinking when a guy is dragging ass and dragging you down because he can't breathe?
Oh, I just still made him look good.
Right.
Yeah, you know the greatest saying of all time? I've lived it my whole life. Fatigue makes cowards of us all.
Right.
Who said that?
Who?
Vince Lombardi.
Ah, gotcha.
Fatigue makes cowards of us all. And it's the truth.
Right.
And you're in there and can't breathe, baby.
Well, let's talk about big shows and nerves real quickly. Mm-hmm. Did you ever get nervous? A lot of guys will get in the ring. I always like to include a few tips some of the younger cats who listen to the show can get from. So free squats, 500 a day will help you wind out. Did you have big show nerves?
All the time. Ray Stevens told me when I started the business, the day I wasn't nervous going out to the ring, don't go out.
Really?
Every day of my life.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to be the best, and I wanted to perform at the highest level. But I live by that motto, too. The day you ain't nervous walking out to that ring, you don't belong in it.
Really?
Because it should mean that much to you as a person.
When you first started out at around the 270, 300 mark, was your ring style the same? Were you a little bit more scientific wrestling before you broke your back? But you've always had a very relaxed style.
Mm-hmm.
Your work always looks impeccable. You mm-hmm. never see any gaps or anything. You're solid, very solid.
Yeah.
But I noticed that you're relaxed mm-hmm. through my eyes. Mm-hmm. Everything looks premier.
Yeah.
It's a pro style.
Yes.
So many kids these days are posing and flexing so much that I think they blow themselves up just because they're trying to present too much.
Yeah, that might be the case too. But I mean, there's just so many things that are fundamentally wrong now. I mean, back when I started, if you turned your back on an opponent to look at the crowd or saw a pound on the turnbuckle, you were going to get killed.
Right.
You know, that hit the turnbuckle to get the crowd going, right?
Yeah.
Or if you had a guy selling right and you turned your back on him and went like that, brother, you got your brains beat out. You think I ever turned my back on Wahoo McDaniels and was selling for me? Are you kidding me? I learned real fast. Jesus.
Why did the blowing up and carrying forth in the ring, your work style was what it was. Let's talk a little bit about the promo style, the presentation, who the Nature Boy was. I've never seen a promo once of yours that lacked content, a message, or confidence. You believed every word you said.
Everything I said. And unfortunately,
that made me believe.
And unfortunately, I lived it.
Yeah.
If I said it, I was doing it.
So let's talk about promos. It's such a lost. Let's talk about promos. It's such a lost art today.
Mm-hmm.
Break down if you're giving any advice to young cats about
what?
Please don't.
He was driving me crazy.
I'm about to break out a razor blade and get color.
What?
Let's talk about promos. Mm-hmm. It's a championship match. We've got to sell some tickets here. What do you tell someone to inspire confidence on a promo?
What do I tell the people? Or
what
do I tell
them? Just you know, how do you go about creating a great promo?
You know, I'm going to tell you, people have asked me that for years. With me, it just rolls off my tongue.
Right.
I walk out there, the light goes on, and I'm talking. And actually, my problem with me is I was believing what I was saying.
I was just fixing to say that. No, but yeah, that has its cons on one side, but it has its pros on the business
side. Oh, it
sure
does, yeah.
And that's what we're talking.
Yeah.
And so, like, man, every time you were out there flapping your gums, man, I was buying it hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah.
Talking about, you know, the women, the suits, the cars, the lifestyle. Well, I got to bring that up. It's a Nature Boy. Your reputation.
Hey, we'll be at the Marriott tonight. Don't care if you go to the show, but stop by the Marriott later on.
Yeah. So we're talking promos. They're within the 5 or 10 period of you at your peak there in that Carolina NWA area. Who were some of the other guys that maybe didn't influence your promo, but you looked up to as being a great promo as well?
Well, the guy that influenced my promo the most was Dusty Rhodes.
Really?
Dusty was magic, man.
But you know.
A different style than mine.
Yes.
But I realized that there's so much energy into it, you know, and then I was around Thunderbolt Patterson. I don't know if you ever heard of Thunderbolt, but he could talk too, man. Yeah, he could talk. And it just came naturally to me. I wish I could tell you it was a magic, but it just came naturally to me. Limousine riding, brother.
Well, how long? Okay, let's talk about that. How long did it take you to come up with that diatribe that you would repeat over
and over
again?
I listen to music. You know, we drive all the way, listen to music, and I can't remember the artist that said it, but I've trademarked it, so I own it now, but Kiss Stealing, Wheeling, Dealing, Limousine Riding, Jet Flying, Son of a Gun. I mean, I trademarked that, but people love that line, and that's like the thing where I said one time I was on TV in Atlanta, and I was just having a good time, right? And so I said, hey, listen, for all you college chicks that are on your way to to Florida to ride Space Mountain, just stop by the Riverdale Marriott. Get yourself a break and ride Space Mountain night all night long for free. Oldest ride, longest line, brother.
we're in the NWA. Ric Flair is taking off as the Nature Boy. Who was your first memorable program with?
My most memorable long-term program would have been Wahoo. Yeah, I hit him over the head. You know, he had me, you know, Wahoo, right?
Yes.
He had me hit him just after the airplane crash, right? With a table leg. He just broke it off, right? I put 60 stitches in his head. He didn't care. No, it was Wahoo, right? He said he hit me with that. But it was a nail, which I didn't see.
Right.
In the table from the wood, right? And I hit him in the head, a damn nail, 60 stitches.
Mm.
But he didn't care.
And he was probably working the next night.
No.
So how long did you guys feud?
That thing went about 6 or 7 months, and then... off and on for a year.
Well, what'd you learn from working with Wahoo?
Oh, I learned that number one, work ethic, and Wahoo is such a phenomenal performer that I mean, he just, you know, he just instilled confidence in me. I mean, you couldn't help it. You couldn't travel on the road. Mom was the kind of guy like you, right? We're driving down the road, right? He'd see a damn deer or something. He'd jump out of the car, grab his gun out of the trunk, and shoot the damn deer. Yeah. I mean, he was just one of those guys, man. You know, I walked in his house, and he kept his thermostat at 60 and slept on a bare rug.
Okay, so there you are. You're in the ring with Wahoo McDaniel.
Yeah.
You're working heel.
Yep.
He's the veteran babyface.
Yep.
Who's calling the match in the ring?
At that point in time, 50-50. Yeah. But I mean, it's like Wahoo would say to me, we'd do the Indian strap matches, right?
Right.
And he'd say, this is a part of the business I couldn't get. And I'll tell the story about the time Vince got mad at me for not hitting you hard enough with the chair.
Yeah.
Do you remember that night?
Yeah.
He chewed me. And I said, I'm not going to hit Steve Austin. And he had a broken neck with a chair that hard, you know? So Wahoo would say, I want you to hit me in the face with that strap coming off the rope as hard as I can. I couldn't get myself to do it.
Right.
Man, he'd get up and chop me five times. I'm going to do this one more time. I'm not strapped to him, all right?
Yeah.
Man, I'd whip him across the face and knock him. I mean, he'd go down. And after this got old, he started gigging his ear. Christ.
Cutting his ear.
He was cutting his ear.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course, Wahoo was always way one step ahead of his time.
Well, let's go down this road here then. So we're talking about a little bit of blade action here. How did you decide to wear your blade on your finger?
Art Nielsen taught me that.
Art Nielsen. That name escapes me.
Yeah, he's an old timer back in those days, and I was in Roanoke, and they said, they want you to bleed tonight. I said, what do you mean bleed? They said, so Art Nielsen taught me how to tape that blade on my finger, and the rest is history. Now I'm Dr. Flair, best blade man in the business.
Well, you know what, so many guys, you know, there'll be some who carry it like a dip of skull, some tape on a wrist, my style.
Yeah, some guys carry it in their mouth.
Yeah.
I could never figure that out.
Yeah, not me.
I don't know how you carry.
I was always breathing so hard that I thought I'd suck that thing down.
No, and I know a lot of guys over the years carry it in their mouth.
Yeah, I never was down with that. I'd always have a couple of backups and a spare, especially if it was on a big pay per view and you had to get the color.
Yeah,
you had to do what you had to do.
No, I always kept one on my finger and I kept one taped to my trunks.
And I'm going to jump forward and then we'll come back to this time. But I remember it was right before I was getting ready to leave the company. It was Columbus, Georgia. I was going to work with you in a cage.
Yeah.
You were wearing your blade.
Yeah.
And you got me a couple of times.
I know.
And I was laughing my ass off. Because
I've nicked a few people.
Yeah, you gave me a couple of nicks, and you're bleeding like a stuck pig. We're working in a cage. And I remember because I showed up that night. I knew I was working with you. And just like you, you always called your matches later on.
Yeah.
And so I always called my matches.
Yeah.
And so I was working with you that night. And I was like, whatever you want to do, Rick, I'm listening.
Yeah.
So I just follow along. Sounds like a kid in a candy store.
I have no offense. All he has to do is let me hit him. I don't even give him a flying mare.
Yeah, but I don't have any offense either. All I did was stomp people in the corner and maybe give him a close line.
Yeah, but talking about conditioning, I used to watch him do that where he'd stomp a guy for a minute and a half. I'd say, you got to take a breath on that one. You know, the guys are trying to, I see the guys trying to do that now, you know.
Yeah.
But Steve would sit back a guy in the corner, right, and he would stomp the guy for a minute and a half. I'd go back up and catch your breath, kid. Good Lord, that had to be blowing you up.
Okay, we're working with Wahoo McDaniel. You're carrying a blade on your finger. You're tough as nails. You cut him open with a nail, 60 stitches.
Yeah.
You learned a lot from the guy, and you got confidence from
him.
When did you first start locking horns with Steamboat or Dusty Rhodes?
Let me think. Well, I never got to wrestle Dusty or Murdoch in the in the AWA, so
and that was funny because when I was doing my research, you know, you guys crossed paths there, and I thought you had actually tied up.
No, I was
the
driver. No, I was the driver.
You were the driver.
You're kidding me? Yeah, I would tell my wife I wasn't even booked, and I'd just drive them to the town.
But did you immediately have a rapport with Dusty Rhodes?
Oh, immediately.
Really?
Immediately. Yeah.
Good dude.
Yeah. He treated me great, and he knew that I thought he was the deal. And when I went to Vernon and said, I want to call myself Ronda Ricky Rhodes, he said, sit down here for a minute. That was it.
Sit down on a learned tree. Yeah. You're going to be Ric Flair.
Yeah, calm down. You're going to be Ric Flair. That's a cool name.
So you're in NWA. So when are you locking up horns here? Was it Dusty before Steamboat?
No, Steamboat first.
Steamboat first.
Yeah.
And you guys, how did you guys meet? Because Steamboat's younger in the business.
Well, Steamboat
you.
Broke in with Gagne as well, right? God. And he went to Atlanta.
Wow.
He went to Atlanta with Barnett, right? And Barnett called Jim Crockett one day, and he said, we got a kid down here, and I really don't have a spot for him, right? And so we traded, I can't remember the guy we sent down there. His name will come to me. And Steamboat came, man, and I saw that kid. I went, holy, this is my baby right here. Because that Steamboat could, even in the infancy of his career, he could work, man.
Right.
And we shot that angle where he tore off my clothes and all that,
yeah,
man.
I saw it the other day.
And, man, we didn't, no. We shot an angle where I beat him up, right? And we went around, didn't draw a dime. So I go to George. I said, let's do this deal where he tears off my clothes. We were sold out from then on, man. Good
but
Lord.
He was a good-looking guy.
Oh, my
is he,
God.
Is he Hawaiian? What is he?
He's half Hawaiian, half Japanese.
Half Hawaiian, but good-looking guy, great physique, could always work.
Yep.
And you guys had some incredible chemistry.
Oh, man.
How many times did you wrestle that guy? 1,000?
I'm guessing about 1,500.
Yeah.
In the course of our career. I mean, if we started out wrestling in 78, we wrestled, you know, back then, what, 7 times a week, twice on Saturday, twice on Sunday, right? And I wrestled him every night for years.
When you're working with a guy that much, and certainly I've wrestled with a bunch of guys a bunch of times, but nothing like you. Your career was much longer than me, and those days that you were in the NWA, the way you guys traveled. But what's it like when you've got, you know 1,500 total matches with a guy, and say you're at number 1,200? Mm. I mean, do you even say anything to anything to each other before you go out there?
Just magic.
Just go.
Yeah. And he goes, when he came back from New York, and
I know, that's what
I'm going to tell you, right?
Yeah.
And he said, "You see me wrestle Savage?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "How many pages of literature do you have to memorize?" Because he'll tell you the story too.
Yeah.
You know, you wrestled Randy. He wanted to write a book.
I knew exactly where you're going with this because I heard the story.
No, I never. I mean, I got to walk out the door. I can tell where I'm at with my opponent when I walk out the door.
Right.
When I hear the crowd. Now I know what direction I'm going. I mean, it's a gift.
Right.
But you can't plan things out. My God, you know how that goes, right? You can walk out one day and have all this laid out and the crowd's going, they're booing the crap out of it. You got to feel it, hear it, and then go from there.
Right. But in that vein, and talking about TV briefly, these days, you know, and we're not saying anything to, the business is the way it is now. It has changed drastically from when you were in and I was in. But these days, you know, you could go out and almost carte blanche, you know, have as much time as you wanted on that card.
Mm-hmm.
These days, they'll nail down specifics for you and say 15, 18, or 18 to 20. And if you're working on TV, you've got to take those scheduled breaks.
Yeah.
So you got to work those breaks into your match.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes, a menu of things to do and mm-hmm. things to go out on.
Mm-hmm.
And it really takes away the freedom or the flow of a match when you're trying to time out commercial breaks instead of just working a match.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's just it. In all fairness to the kids today, right, you can get to the building and they'll say you have 10 minutes because it's live TV. You'll get to the gorilla and they'll say you got 3 minutes, and whatever they planned, you got to be able to ad lib because you can't put a 10-minute match together in 3 minutes that you've been practicing all day long. I mean, but it's live TV. It's just a different time for us.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, my hat's off to them because, the interview can run long and then, somebody's talking too long and you get there and you lose a minute here. Pretty soon you got a 10-minute match worked out and you get up the grill and they say you got 2 minutes. So what are you going to do? my hat's off to them. It's hard.
And there's nothing worse than going to grill and say, okay, well, you guys had 12, you got 7.
Yeah, you've been through it, I'm sure.
Hey, man, it sucks.
But you always won. Me, I just had to figure out a way to lose faster.
Well, you know what? Yeah. Sometimes, when they tell you, you got 12 minutes, and all of a sudden you get to gorilla, and they say you've got 7, and, you've got 10 pounds of shit you're trying to put in a 5-pound bag. Nobody gets over because it's just a rolling cluster inside the ring, and you've got to be able to tell a story. But anyway, I'm sitting here on my ass in a hotel room with the Nature Boy Ric Flair, got Mo Darwich here in stealth mode, running the controls, making sure we document history here, the greatest of all time. I'm talking to Ric Flair, coming back from our sponsors.
Pluto TV is playing the biggest movies every night this summer for free. Watch hit movies like The Matrix, G.I. Joe Retaliation, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Scary Movie, Runaway Bride, and more all summer long. Check out the biggest stars like The Rock, Keanu Reeves, Tom Cruise, Julia Roberts, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and more. Plus, Pluto TV has hundreds of free TV channels in English and Spanish featuring TV shows, news, sports, comedy, and more, all for free. Download the free Pluto TV app on your favorite streaming device, including Android and Apple smartphones. Pluto TV. Drop in, watch free.
Welcome to the Steve Austin Show.
All right, Steve Austin coming back from a break. And once again, thanks to our sponsors. Keep the show on the air for free. I damn sure can't pay for it. And I'm sitting here talking to Nature Boy Ric Flair. We're in a hotel room. I got some candles burning. The atmosphere's going. The Nature Boy's got some skull in his mouth. There's a beer on the table. I'm drinking water. I might crack one open here in a minute.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's embarrassing in itself.
I know, but
You're the only wrestler alive that got paid to drink after the match.
Here's the thing. When you're a hack like me talking to the greatest of all time, you got to maintain your sanity and professionalism. And I also drove up here. I ain't got a limo driver like you. When we left off, we were talking about Ricky Steamboat, and I was there for so many of your matches. Mm-hmm. When you wrestled him, I saw so many of them on pay-per-view or television. I've seen so many on YouTube.
Look, can I interrupt you for a minute? Can I interrupt you for a minute?
Yeah.
One of the best matches I ever saw in my life. We were in Sioux City, Iowa, and me and Hogan were the main event, and him and Steamboat were ahead of us, and him and Steamboat tore that joint down, and I had to go out there with Hulk. Afterward. Do you remember that?
No, I don't remember that.
Yeah, you kidding? You and Steamboat went out and stole the show. You went about 10 minutes too long. Remember Eric was screaming?
No, I can't remember.
Yeah, but you and Steamboat stole it, man.
The best match I ever had was Steamboat. No, thank you if it was a good match. I remember one time we were working around a horn. You remember the old Los Angeles Forum?
Yeah.
Man, that was a great building.
Yeah.
And we were way back in the day, and I was wrestling Steamboat. We were going around doing 30-minute mm-hmm. Broadways. Mm-hmm. And, man, I had...
No, that's WWE or...
No, this was WCW.
I remember that, yeah.
Man, that old building, and there was no cameras rolling. It was just a house show here in L.A.
Yeah.
And, man, that was one of the matches I'm most proud of, which, of course, nobody saw because there may be 7,000 mm-hmm. people there in the building. The territory wasn't drawn worth flies. But out of all the matches, we're talking about you. What would be the classic defining Steamboat Flair match?
Chicago, where I dropped the title to him.
Chicago,
that three-match series, remember?
Yeah.
Chicago, wrestled in Chicago, I dropped the title, then we went an hour in New Orleans. It's where the company, the greatest dream of them, I walk out to the ring, Clash of Champions, right? Me and Steamboat for an hour, right? And they got R-I-C-K Flair. They spell my name right. Are you kidding me?
I think
it's Steamboat. They can't spell my name right here. What the hell?
Were you thinking that when you were out
yeah,
there?
Yeah, I was laughing. Like,
I know, but it makes you mad, though. You laugh.
Made me laugh. I go, this tells me where we're at right now, brother. Can't even spell my name right.
So that match was the one that you thought was
Chicago,
the
all three of those matches.
Yeah.
I mean, we were both older at that point, but in the one in Nashville, we tore it down, man.
Right.
That's when we invented hardcore wrestling, because Terry Funk and I shot the angle after the match. Terry came in and... You don't even know this story. I invented hardcore wrestling. I'm going to tell you the story. So Funk comes in and goes to shake my hand. We shot the angle, beats me up, throws me out, right? Throws me in the post, gig, right?
Right.
And he says, "Come on, we're going to try something really cool." I said, "What?" He said, "I'm going to power drive you through the table." This is just how all hardcore started. He threw me up on a table. I said, "What are you going to power drive me through the table?" So, of course, Terry picks me up. I put my legs straight up. I'm a professional. Terry throws his feet out like Orndorff used to do, yeah. Right? The table don't break. He almost broke my neck. And then, hence hardcore wrestling. Because nobody went through a table before that.
But then you told me the story last night. You looked over and said, "What are you doing?"
Yeah? Him?
Yeah, didn't you ask Terry?
Yeah, I said, "What are you doing, man? Why are you throwing me up on the table?" I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "Don't watch it. This will be cool as hell. We never did this before."
I got to get your opinion because you're the expert here. The senior expert. Mm-hmm. Steamboat was an opponent for you who was just custom made. Mm-hmm. You couldn't, mm-hmm. all the qualities that he embodied. Mm-hmm. So then let me ask you a question for our young wrestlers to be. In your opinion, what makes for a great babyface?
Technically, the ability to be able to sell.
Sell,
yeah, yeah.
But I mean, fire,
yeah,
like
but
some
fire,
you gotta
yeah,
fire, have
yeah,
fire, which
yeah,
Steamboat had boatloads.
Yeah, but if you don't get the guy down,
right,
all the fire in the world doesn't mean nothing. Does that make sense?
Right.
Steamboat, he built, he came back from underneath, and gradually, he built that comeback. I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But he, every time he'd smack me, he'd walk away selling whatever I'd done to him.
And
right?
That was when you guys started having those classic chop exchanges and the one that almost went all the way around the ring and spring into action.
Yeah, exactly.
But he would sell.
Yeah, you have to get a guy down in a position where the people think he's hurt. Before the comeback means anything.
But he cannot die.
Yeah.
He's got to be smart enough not to die. So then on the back end of that, so then what makes for a great heel?
A great heel is a guy that's just one key word, unselfish.
Unselfish. Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And agreed. I didn't think you were going to say that word. Mm-hmm. Unselfish.
Unselfish. Because a great heel just, you know, he's out there, in my opinion, to make the opponent at all costs, because you know, and ultimately, what paid off for me is I wrestled so many guys that didn't have the same ability that I did. That's why they started liking me, because they knew that I was
knew that I was going to get them over.
That I was working for everybody. Right. I mean, I was you know.
But along with
hence the saying, wrestling a broomstick.
Well, you know, again, going back to that
and I've wrestled a lot of broomsticks.
A lot of broomsticks. But also, you know, a heel has to be vicious. He has to be relentless.
Yeah,
and you were.
Mean.
You were relentless.
Yeah.
And what I
liked. Dirtiest player in the game, man.
The dirtiest player in the game. But what I always liked about your stories, as you told them, you would start off on a random body part. It might be an arm, shoulder, a little bit of neck.
Yep.
And that was kind of like that prelim heat. Mm-hmm. You know, that baby face would come on back. Yep. And then finally, for that real heat, of course, your finish was a figure four leg lock. So then you
Which I never won. I never beat anybody with it, but I had.
Well, right. But
I had, like I said last night to you, I had it on you 400 times. But you always, you either turn it over or got to the rope.
Yeah, but it was the leg braces that got me through it. But you knew when you ground that leg down, that's when you shifted gears.
Yeah.
So that's when that intense heat was, heat session was going to start for you.
Yeah, and Steamboat
But
was
you
great
were relentless in doing
Steamboat
it.
Steamboat would let me lift him up a mile.
Yeah.
Break his, you know, do that leg breaker across, you know, with his leg. I'm holding his ankle
right
on my knee, and then he would go down like he was in, you know, in pain, huge pain. I put that figure four on him, and Steamboat sold that baby like it's unreal.
And to your other unselfish, but that heel's got to sell like a sumbitch.
Oh, hell yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So many heels, like I said, unselfish, I guess. But so many heels don't recognize that. Hey, you've got to be able to hurt me.
Yeah.
But so many guys get in tough guy mode that they don't see the light.
It doesn't work.
No, at all.
And by the way, where are they now?
Yeah. God, speaking of selling, I got to. This jarred my mind. We were talking last night. Me and Ric Flair were talking like crazy last night. And we
should have so much fun.
We should have felt. We should have taped this last night. But okay, working with Steamboat, awesome babyface, killer programs, the work, premier, grade A, the best it can get. Any Flair Steamboat match you can watch, go watch and check it out. But I wanted to ask you real quickly, because I watched the match where you wrestled Vader.
Yeah.
And Harley Race.
Yeah.
Eight-time world champion. Yeah. One of the greatest of all time.
Harley was his manager.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he was beating the hell out of you.
Thank you.
I was like, I can't wait to talk to Rick.
Jeez.
Because, I mean, it looked like to me he was killing you.
Leon, he was.
Yeah. but then Harley
said to me, start hitting him back. And I did, man. I blacked both his eyes. He showed up the next day with two huge eyes. But his deal was hitting in the ears, right?
Yeah, yeah.
My ears were like cauliflower for a month. But yeah. Leon's a great guy. And I tell
you
for a big guy, he can work too, man.
And you know, hey, man, yes, he can work. Yeah. And, man, the moonsault, all the stuff that he did. He had a great run in WCW.
I got to tell you a great story.
Go ahead.
Let me interrupt, okay? So Kevin Sullivan's booking for WCW, right? So he says, we're going to do something really cool. We're going to book you and Arn against Vader in Daytona. The Clash of Champions. I go, me and Arn against Vader? He goes, yeah, you guys, it's going to be like Arnold eating his legs, and then you're going to beat the crap out of him, right? Well, we get to the building, you know, so, right? Vader goes over, me and Arn, right? So the only thing that made me laugh was Vader had killed me. He gave me a suplex up. Vader off the top rope, you know, which I like, I don't mind taking, right? But then he splashed Arn.
What happened?
I looked at me and said, why do you get me in this situation? I didn't do it. I said, talk to Shorty. Shorty booked a match. Oh, my God. It was ridiculous. How could Vader beat me in Iron? Are you kidding me? Jesus Christ. I'll tell you another great story, too.
Go ahead.
Talk about selling, right? The guy who was the baddest guy of all time in our business. I don't mean street tough.
Nope.
I'm not talking about a Haku.
Yeah.
was Bruiser Brody.
Yeah.
But Brody, I'd wrestle him for hours everywhere, Japan, United States, wherever he went, we sold out. Well, we basically canceled the area with Buck and then Japan a lot, right?
Yeah.
And St. Louis, big time in St. Louis.
Yeah.
But Brody would let me get him down.
Yes.
Yeah, he did. And Brody was 6'6", 320 pounds, but Brody would sell my stuff.
Right.
You know, sometimes I'm almost to the point where Brody was in great shape, man.
Yeah.
Don't understand. Brody could go an hour like nobody, like Stan Hansen, the machine, right? But Brody would let me get him down. And man, once I got him down, all you could hear was Bruiser, 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 right?
Yeah.
And another guy that sold for me in St. Louis, believe it or not, I wrestled him four times, was Dick. And nobody was over like Dick the Bruiser there. My God, you know, and me and Dick the Bruiser. And he let me, we went into Sam Muschek one night, goes, two out of three falls. I go, oh God, I'm not going to get involved in this. I'm just send me out there. And Dick the Bruiser let me put the figure four on him. He submitted.
Really?
One fall, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And then we went, you know, went into a DQ or something, you know. But, you know, if a guy will sell for you, you know, and Bruiser didn't have any offense, right? But he was Dick the Bruiser.
Well, you know, it's funny. When we talk about Bruiser Brody, because you watch so many of his matches on YouTube, and, of course, I loved watching him when he would appear. He's independent everywhere, and I was catching him wherever I could. The thing about it, he loved to brawl. He was a brawler. But when he wrestled you, he would lock up with you and work high spots work your style. You could work anybody's style to your credit.
Yeah.
But it was always interesting because he was always ready to lock up with you. It looked like he enjoyed working with
you. I'll tell you what's not funny is laying on that ring floor and watching him run across the floor with that to drop that big knee in you.
Yeah.
Never hurt me once.
Really?
Never. Never. Brody never hurt me one time.
How about the Harley Race knee drop?
Oh, the best. Harley never hurt anybody.
Yeah, Harley's
It's like the time. I'm wrestling. this is a great story. I love it. I got to throw these in. So I'm wrestling for WWE, right? And I was like, Lawler was doing the commentary, and like, there goes Ric Flair climbing up the rope, 55-year-old, getting slammed off the rope. Everybody knew it was coming, right?
Yeah.
So I walk back there, and Vince calls me in the office, and he goes, where did you learn that? I said, from Harley Race. So I told the story of my Hall of Fame induction. You were there.
Yeah.
I said, why don't you ask Harley now who taught me how to slam on? I said it, you know, on the air.
Yeah.
Because it's truth. I mean, Harley did it for nights. I learned it from Harley. But it's a big bump and people didn't do it. Even like Bret Hart would say to me, why do you like to take that beel off a top rope? I said, Bret, it ain't a beel. It's called a slam, you know? Just lift me and throw me, I'm good.
Right. Hey, well, listen, okay, that classic, I'm glad you brought that up. How many times do you figure you've been slammed off that top turnbuckle?
Oh, how many matches have I had?
Times 4.
I ain't missed one.
Times 4.
I ain't missed one. It's been 4 decades, you tell me?
No, however many matches, because you usually took at least 1 to 3 a match, sometimes more.
Oh, the press slam, you know, the Sting would press slam me 300 times.
I mean, how are you feeling right now?
I feel great.
Your back don't hurt.
My back don't hurt. I swear to God, Steve, almost bust my knees don't hurt. I've had 2 rotator cuff surgeries, right?
Yeah.
And they don't bother me. Jim Andrews put me together. He told me it was like putting together an old piece of leather, but he said it'll work. The toughest thing about rotator is the rehab on it. Holy cow, man.
Yeah, 2 years ago.
Holy cow.
It sucks.
Yeah, they put me on morphine, right? A morphine drip, right? And with Andrews, you know, Andrews, Andrews operated on you?
No, I did a surgeon in San Antonio.
Youngblood?
No, that was my neck.
Okay, well, anyway, the rehab on that thing. So they put me on morphine, and I'm on a drug. I don't take any drugs, no pills. I can say it honestly.
Yeah.
Never pain pills, nothing. I never got into that gig. And so they put me on this morphine drip, and man, it was giving me horrible anxiety, right?
Really?
So I said to the nurse, you know, they operated me at 7 o'clock at night, so they couldn't start the rehab that day. So I go to the nurse, I go, honey, you got to take me off this thing. I don't need it.
Right.
And she goes, well, no, I'll get in trouble. I said, ma'am, I cannot. I'm sitting here in a ton of anxiety. And so she said, well, I'll take it off, but then a nurse might come in and change it. I said, just do me a favor. I said, get my pants. She went and got my pants. I gave her $100. She went and got me a 12-pack of beer. Brought it in. I was sitting there at Hell South drinking beer all night long. When they came to get me in the morning for that rehab, though, they took me down. And Kevin Wilk, you know who Kevin is, right?
Yes.
Yeah, Kevin's the best, right? The funny he was lifting my arm. Oh, my God. I said, man, I broke out into a sweat like hell.
Yeah.
Holy cow. I mean, I was dying. I said, okay, maybe I can take something here, but let's come to a compromise.
Well, I remember trying to do mine.
So the one thing I could take Demerol.
The little thing that got me was, you know, like when you're standing in the shower, mm-hmm. the little creepy crawly thing,
yeah.
and you try to get your hand up the side of the wall,
and yeah.
you get that sticking point right there, and you're like, I'm never going to be able to move this thing again
like I used to. I know.
And then finally it all comes back, but it's a pain in the ass.
Andrews wouldn't let you leave the hospital until your arm could go straight up in the air.
Oh, my.
But then you had to wear that damn thing for 12 weeks, right?
I mean, dude, that sucked.
Brutal. I had both of them done.
Yeah. Were you able to sleep good? I totally.
No, yeah. Like, well, the thing of it is, you can't sleep. You have to sleep on your back.
Yeah.
And I'm a guy, I like to sleep on my stomach, you know. So, but you had no choice.
Man, you brought up an interesting name a while ago, out of the blue. And, man, this, you know, our conversation is you and me shooting the shit. And I'm not following hardly nothing here, just going on memory in our conversation. But you brought up Bruiser Brody, and he's one of my favorites of all time. And we were talking the other day about him dying in Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm.
You were in Puerto Rico when that happened, were you?
86, yes, sir.
So give me the 411. What
okay, here's the exact story. And people need to hear this because a lot of people don't know it. Jose Gonzalez, the guy that stabbed him. Okay, his wrestling name was The Invader, right?
Right.
So they had built this program, and over in Puerto Rico, back in the old days, they thought everything was real. So they had put Vader, Jose Gonzalez, in the hospital. He went and stayed for a month. Okay, he comes back, and Brody's supposed to do the favor. Well, Brody wouldn't do it. Well, what nobody understands is that Jose had just built a new home, and this was 3 days before the match, right? And he was out in front with his wife decorating the garden and all that, and the two-year-old baby crawled out and fell in the pool and drowned. So he was crazy anyway, as anybody would be, right?
Mm.
So when they sent word that Brody wasn't going to do it, I mean, I didn't actually see it happen, but right. I was Tony Atlas was there with me,
right?
And we never went back again. You know?
So what happened? I mean, allegedly, Invader called him into the shower, did the deal, gutted him, and Brody died on the shower floor.
Yep.
I talked to Tony Atlas. He used to be one of my former travel partners. He said basically he died in Tony's arms.
He did. Yeah.
What? Didn't call an ambulance. Everybody kayfabe.
Well, there wasn't kayfabe. It was you couldn't get into the arena. We're talking. We're at Bayamón, 30,000 people. I remember the stadium. We were at Bayamón, and you know, down there they're crazy. You know, a 13-year-old kid will look at you. You walk out of the dugout, right, and a 13-year-old kid will go, "Yeah, cut your guts out." You know, Puerto Rico in the old days.
Right.
It was a rough place to work, man.
So
thank God for the Godato and the Holiday Inn.
But say the deed goes down. Brody's laying in the shower, bleeding to death. Mm-hmm. Is there panic, pandemonium in the dressing room? What's going on?
Everybody's going
crazy. What are you
thinking? I'm thinking that I got to wrestle Cologne for an hour that night. I went right back to focusing on what I had to do. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's heavy. Just because.
No, you know what happened? Another funny story about me and Brody, when we were in Puerto Rico together all the time. I'm the champion, right?
Yeah.
So I'm supposed to go on last, right? And me and Brody would argue every time because you didn't want to be the last one out there, right?
Right.
I'll tell you the greatest story of all time. This is historical. So they talk Ox Baker into going on last. I can't remember who Ox was wrestling, right? So we're running across the parking lot to beat the crowd because they'll kill you, right?
Yeah. They really will kill you.
They covered Ox Baker in chairs, metal, dirt. We all left Ox going, "What the hell? I'm not even getting paid big for this." They killed Ox Baker. Man, I'm running across the parking lot. Me and Brody argue all the time. I said, I'm not going on last year tonight. I know the gig.
Was he a pretty good guy?
Brody?
Yeah.
A great guy.
Yeah.
I love Brody. I mean,
I know he was a tough businessman.
A lot of people didn't get along
with
him, but he didn't like doing business.
Right.
Because at that time, the magazines were so popular, right? And he was making his jack in Japan.
Right.
And he didn't want to get beat and have it show up on the Wrestling Pro Wrestling Illustrated. And because the magazines were huge in Japan then, too. He and Hanson, are you kidding
me? That's what I was going to ask you, because I would watch on YouTube when Brody and Hanson walked to the ring back in the day with those bull ropes and those cowbells.
In Japan.
And they'd be smacking the hell out of those Japanese fans. I mean,
the Japanese people loved it.
I know. They wanted to be hit with the cowbell. Yeah. It was crazy.
Yeah, I'll tell you the greatest match I ever saw in Japan.
Yeah.
And I've been in a lot of them myself.
Yeah.
Good ones, right? was the night that they booked Tenru and Dick Slater against Brody and Hanson.
Right.
And let me tell you something. Dick Slater, brother, he didn't budge for anybody. Dick Slater was tougher than
Hanson. I always heard that he was tough as nails. You're saying
hell.
Yes.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Wow.
Brother, he had thunder in his right hand, man. I ain't kidding you. Dick Slater could punch. Ask Harley Race.
No, I believe it.
Yeah, no,
everybody told it. I just never would have known.
Are you kidding? Dick Slater, poor guy now is in a wheelchair.
I didn't know that.
Terrible health in Tampa, and just a bunch of stuff. But
yeah.
Dick Slater and his day, man. And I'll tell you something else. The best tag team I ever saw in my life outside of Tully and Arn was Slater and Orton Jr. when they were in Georgia.
I love Bob Orton Jr.
Oh, my God, yeah.
I loved
it. They were a phenomenal tag team. Good Lord. And they both could work their ass off, you know. You know, Bob, you know, I tell Bob to this day, he's the greatest offensive worker in the world, but he don't like to bump around a lot. I see Bob all the time, you know, when Randy's around. I'd say, you had the most offensive tools anybody ever saw, but you couldn't fall down.
he was good at making people look good. He's economical. I just liked what he did.
Ace. Yeah. Piper's bodyguard.
Put a cast on his arm, let him whack people with it.
Yeah, no, but Bob is great, man. I mean, he and I have remained close friends over all these years, and but when we're doing working with Bob, he liked to be on the offense,
right?
And he was a bad guy.
I was a good guy. You want to be on offense?
Yeah. I once said to somebody. People say, what do you want the most out of this business? I said, I want someone to work with me now that I'm a good guy. Like I worked with them when I was a bad guy. Yeah. That there's nobody like that. People don't get it. All I did was sell all night long. But the people loved it.
Oh, it was great.
I just bumped around, yeah.
Yeah. And then you would have a come up of offense and you put the guy back on top. And then, you know, you got yours when it was time to get the heat.
Yeah, I got mine to get the heat.
What I liked about you is it was for a brief time in WCW. All of a sudden, I was stunning Steve, and it was like a couple of people thought I was going to be the next Ric Flair.
Yeah.
And, of course, that never happened.
Well, of course
there's never going to be another Ric Flair. But, I mean, no, my point is this. We were at a TV taping. I don't know if it was Anderson, South Carolina, or some of the little towns in Georgia we used to always do those TV tapings at. It wasn't center stage.
Not the moment Kazmaier had the 100-pound dumbbells.
No, not that one. But it was a 6-man match, and I remember because I was
you and I were partners.
Yes.
Yeah, and Steve, I'll tell you what you said to me. You said, "What are you out there taking all the bones for? Tag me in."
Well, it was just.
Do you remember saying that to me?
Yeah, because I remember saying something because I was like, "Man, this guy, I'll be as good as this guy one of these days." And all of a sudden, I'm sitting there on the apron watching you work, and I'm thinking, "Man, I'll never be as good as this guy. This guy's crazy good." Because you were like Steve Ray Vaughan on a guitar, just flawless and endless, and never lost, and always had great ring general and command of the situation.
He said to me, "Tag me in, I'll take some of his bumps." I said, "You got plenty of time for that.
Yeah,
I'll take him tonight."
But it was watching a master at work. Was what impressed me. But we brought up tag teams. I enjoyed tagging when I was with Brian Pillman. God rest his soul. Was a super cat that we both know and love.
Of course.
So what were some of your favorite tag teams? You said Arn and Tully was your favorite, just saying.
Well, Arn and Tully, I thought they were in a class of their own.
You were in...
Ray and Nick.
Ray
and Nick were phenomenal.
Yes, they were. But you and...
But Ray and Nick also had Bobby Heenan.
Right.
And Bobby, of course, you know, is...
And you're talking about Ray Stevens and Nick Bockwinkel?
Yes.
Yes.
They had Bobby Heenan as a manager. And
right.
brother, Bobby Heenan could work.
Yeah.
Man, there are two things that had to happen in a match, in that tag match. Ray had to do the flip, right? That made me happy. But when Heenan got in there, and that upside down backward bump, but nobody got it. Bobby Heenan was a great worker.
Oh, tremendous.
Phenomenal worker.
Anyway, not only was he a great worker, but he was a great talker, and he's one of the funniest guys I've ever listened to in my life.
He and Arn Anderson, the two wittiest guys I've ever met in my life. When they inducted Bobby Heenan in the Hall of Fame, right, he told the story. I was sitting in the audience. He was killing me. He said, Vince called me one day and said, "You're going to manage Ric Flair." and he said this at the Hall of Fame in front of my kids. He goes, "I didn't know I was traveling with Larry Flint." We're flying back after a 3-day run, and we're going back to Madison Square Garden. I'm going to wrestle Hulk or Piper tonight. I can't remember. And he goes, I hope your hair falls out and grows back red. He was so mad at me because I got him drunk every night. You know, I kept him out all night. He goes, Vince, I quit. But they induct him in the Hall of Fame. He said, Vince told me I was going to manage Ric Flair. After 2 weeks, I didn't realize I was managing Larry Flint. I don't know if people think that about me. I don't get people drunk, do I?
No. And there's never any women around either.
No.
I'm here talking to Ric Flair. I'm in a hotel room. I'm going to take a quick break. We're going to start talking a little bit about tag teams and some other stuff. But it's the greatest of all time here with Steve Austin, Bone Darwich, and Stealth Bone. Recording. Audio whoop-ass.
This has been a Podcast One production. Download new episodes of The Steve Austin Show every Tuesday at PodcastOne.com. That's PodcastOne.com.
Hey, man, do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with GEICO. GEICO makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's GEICO easy. Visit GEICO.com today. That's GEICO.com.
Yo, what's good? It's your boy, Big Brother Jake, a.k.a. Jake Warner.
My government name.
Check it out. I host a show called the Big Brother Jake Podcast. And I've taken my talents to the biggest and baddest platform on the planet. That's right, baby. Podcast One. My show is unique as I talk about everything. Life, sports, entertainment, being a single dad juggling several jobs. I'm a hot mess, but it's damn entertaining. Subscribe and review now on Apple Podcasts and listen on Podcast One or wherever you get your podcasts.